The president spoke in the last hour. He spoke extensively and also took questions from the press. He said the U.S. will increase support for Iraqi security forces and will lead a diplomatic effort to work with Iraq and other countries in the region to stop the fighting, sending Secretary of State John Kerry to the region this weekend. We have a host of NPR reporters to help us parse this. Ron Elving, NPR's senior Washington editor, Tom Bowman, NPR's Pentagon reporter. And Tom, we had been speaking to you about your thoughts of what the president said. You know, what jumped out is that he said he won't support one sect over another, but it seems like that would be very difficult if, in fact, the U.S. is now sending more advisors to work with the Iraqi government, which is a Shia-backed government, against the Sunni militias. Continue your thought. What jumped out at you?
Well, first of all, that they're sending more than we had anticipated. There was talk of 100 Green Berets. Now they're saying up to 300 military folks from the United States to train, advise, and support. They talked about Joint Operations Center with the Iraqis in both Baghdad and northern Iraq. And also, there were some reports that missile strikes were off the table. He made it clear that they would continue looking for potential targets with ISIS, and that if they did find those targets and they were going to take airstrikes with drones or fixed-wing aircraft, they would be precise. So that's kind of what jumped out at me. But, of course, he also said, listen, the local forces have to take the lead here, and that's still very much an open question. As we all know, up in Mosul, the Iraqi forces dropped their weapons and took off their uniforms and headed for the high grass.
Ron Elving, you weigh in. What did you hear?
I was struck by the degree to which the president was low-key. There was very little sense of crisis in the president's presentation. He did not sound overly urgent, although obviously this is a situation of emergency. He did not sound as though he were militant in any way or trying to exhort the American people to some sort of heroic effort. He was professorial at times, almost discursive in some of his answers, as though he were considering what he was saying and thinking back and forth about those things. It was not overall, although we had prepared remarks at the very beginning, it was not overall a particularly precise or particularly firm set of statements that he was making. He seemed to be wanting to have a lot of leeway, give John Kerry some room to run, give John Kerry a chance to talk to foreign leaders when he gets overseas in the region and talk about how they may be able to nudge, or more than nudge, the current Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki out of power.
Well, it's interesting you say he was low-key. He appeared exhausted. But what did he say about Maliki? Because he was asked directly, do you think he is a unifier?
He was quite careful to say that we cannot choose the leaders in Iraq. Now, one might reflect for a moment and think we have done some of that in the last 10 years. Regime change was clearly what we had in mind when we went after Saddam Hussein, and we had a lot to do with the political process that followed after his fall. But now we would like to get out of that business and let Iraq be a true democracy. I think that was the ultimate aim of the Bush administration as well. And now that they have actually chosen, and the president praised their electoral process and the millions who voted, some at great risk, the president would like to carry through with that and not be seen as, in some sense or another, undermining it. At the same time, there is general international agreement that the bad actor who is causing this civil war to erupt is the prime minister.
Yeah. Let me bring in Jim Walsh, who's an expert in international security at MIT Security Studies Program. Jim, do you think the president made the case to Americans who are wondering whether we should be sending any people into Iraq to help defend places like Baghdad against ISIS?
Well, I think the president is aware that the American public really doesn't have a big appetite, any interest in boots on the ground. And I think that comes out in the second half of the speech. We really had two speeches. The first speech was, here's a list of things I might do. You know, targeted strikes.
I might do, you're saying.
Because he said, if and when we use strikes, they will be targeted and precise. And we're going to send in, quote, a small number of advisors. Then the second half of the speech is really principles. And what struck me was, he said, and these are exact quotes, there is no military solution to this, and certainly not one led by the United States, that, quote, above all, Iraqi leaders need a political agreement. And as Robin said, he's not going to support one sect. We are not going to be al-Maliki's air force here. There are conditions that must be met by the Iraqi polity if we're going to get more involved than we are.
Well, you've asked Jim how he feels about whether or not this speech reached the American people. Ron Elving, how did it reach Washington and the many critics of the president?
The critics will not be satisfied unless the president makes a different kind of commitment to defeating ISIS or ISIL. That could be in the form of helping al-Maliki. It could be in the form of something else. But they would like to see the president take a more activist drive against ISIS or ISIL. The other critics of the president, the people who don't want us to even put a toe back in this particular water, are probably also going to be warning and cautioning that the president has left too much open exposure to American forces that might lead to our becoming more involved if bad things were to happen to Americans who are in the country or are going to the country.
Can I just jump in here?
Yeah.
You know, what jumped out at me, too, was the president never said in his statement, why is this of interest to the American people? When I go home tonight and talk to my neighbors and they hear about this, they're going to say, we're going back into Iraq? Are you kidding me? And it was only after, I think, fourth or fifth question, someone said, you know, basically, why are you doing this? And he said, first of all, we can't see Iraq descend into a civil war. It would destabilize the region and our allies. He talked about energy markets. We all know that to be oil, of course. The price of oil could go up, paying more at the pump. And he also said, you know, we can't have a safe haven for these ISIS militants that could perhaps target not only the region but the homeland in the future. Again, he never said that in his statement. It took four or five questions a reporter had to ask him before he actually talked about that.
Yeah.
Well, Deb Amos, let me bring you in Erbil, Iraq. How do you think that this resonated in the region and with all of the different players in that region, all with different interests?
I think that it will be welcome here. In particular, regional players have criticized the White House for being so hands-off in the region, and we certainly saw that in the 3 years of the uprising in Syria. And for all of those in the Middle East who complained during the Bush administration that Washington was too heavy-handed, they were even less comfortable when there was no Washington hand at all. And that the president spoke so directly to the particular problems here. He did say that it was their political problem. There is no military solution. But it elevates Iraq in a way that will at least signal to Iraqis that Washington is now paying very direct attention, that he's sending Secretary of State John Kerry out to the region to set off a diplomatic mission as well as these potential changes in sort of military posture and an advisory role. So I actually think this speech will be calming in some ways.
Although he did say, you know, unlike some of the neighbors in the region, we still provide Iraq's government with significant assistance. We don't have ambitions in their country.
Well, Americans always say that we don't have ambitions, but there were certainly a couple of goals that he laid out which are plain to see, and that is there is an oil market that can be very destabilizing, already is. Oil is inching up over the past couple of days because of the instability here in Iraq. But I think the most compelling argument that he made, and it is true, he didn't do it in principles as he gave the speech, but this notion that you have this swath of territory between Syria and Iraq that's ungovernable, that can be filled by militants who have been coming from all over the world to join, is not a good thing and needs to be addressed.
It's NPR international correspondent Deborah Amos in Erbil in Iraq in the Kurdish region, but of course she's reported from across that country. Tom Bowman, NPR Pentagon reporter, is in Washington, as is Ron Elving, NPR's senior Washington editor, and we've got Jim Walsh, an expert in international security at MIT, here in the studio with us. I just want to pick up on, it's just a little detail, but so that we don't keep tripping over it, the president referred to this extremist
yes.
Sunni group as ISIL, which is short for the Islamic State in Iraq and the Levant, which some call it, but others call it the Islamic State in Iraq and Syria, which brings us to ISIS. So that's the difference between the two meanings of the word. But Deb, just before...
But in fact, let me say
ahead.
This, Robin, and that is that actually that's not the correct translation. It's the Islamic
right.
State in Iraq and Sham. And Sham refers to a much wider area than just Syria. So it is the same, Levant and Sham, mean the same thing, and it's a much wider area.
Well, it's interesting. The New York Times did a whole piece on this today, and they point out that the BBC uses ISIS as the acronym, but then says Levant when spelling the name. But you're pointing out that that's an important distinction, Levant or Sham, because it means broader.
Yes, and when they are talking about establishing a caliphate, they don't just mean in northern Syria and in western Iraq. They mean the areas that were once controlled under the Ottoman Empire when there was a caliphate here, and when the Islamic ruler was, you know, in Istanbul.
That's why we love Deb Amos reporting for NPR in Iraq.
And Ron, you know, as we wrap up this segment of the program, let me go back to you. What happens now? What's the president's next move today, do you think?
The president's next move probably is to have further meetings with John Kerry before Kerry heads off for Iraq and to talk to as many other national leaders in the region as he possibly can, get as many actors as possible involved as we move toward some sort of diplomatic some sort of a plan by which Maliki's continuation in power is addressed. If that cannot be addressed, then some sort of military solution will become necessary.
NPR senior Washington editor Ron Elving. We've also been speaking with Tom Bowman, NPR's Pentagon reporter, Deborah Amos, NPR's international correspondent in Erbil, Iraq, and Jim Walsh, expert in international security at MIT's Security Studies Program. Stay with us. This is Here and Now.